You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, April the 15th, 2018. I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check out the show all the time at MetsMorizedOnline.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media. And you can get the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and over at our friends, The Grueling Truth, which is a member of the iHeart Radio Network. Hope everybody's doing well. Coming to you just a little bit after the Mets 3-2 win over the Milwaukee Brewers. Mets take 2 out of 3 in the 3-game set. Very cold and raw day at Citi Field today. Mets are now 12-2 on the regular season. You could not ask for a better start. And joining me in just a little bit, good friend of the program. He's been on Sirius XM. You've probably heard him there. He's had his own radio network. He was out in St. Louis, Colorado. He's been in radio a long time. Now he's back in the New York state of mind. It's Dino Costa. He'll be joining me. Dino's on the AM 970 program, The Answer, from Tuesday to Friday from 12 to 3 a.m. He does the New York Sports Talk, and he'll be talking Mets with me in just a little bit. Before we get to Dino, let me set this up here a little bit. And, you know, you don't want to – and the last time I saw you guys, it was right after the WLIE 540 a.m. program that I subbed in for Rich Catino. So it was in the middle of that wild Mets-Nats game last weekend. And the, it's kind of a house money game. You know, the Mets could win it, lose it, whatever. It really didn't change the analysis of where you were with this Mets team, which was certainly very excited after a really good week of baseball. Well, after winning that extra inning game and dodging a couple of bullets throughout, the Mets went on to win almost another week's worth of games. And after their win today, are 12-2 with the Nats coming in. The Nats are now 6 games back. So this is kind of an early, if you want to talk about the baseball season being a marathon, the Mets jumped out a pretty good amount of lengths from the pack, and the Nats being their main competition. Of course, you have the Braves, the Phillies, you know, we're not really counting the Marlins who are in the rebuilding mode, but keep an eye on the Phillies. They've been playing better. The Braves, you know, have some talent, so I don't want to discount them, but right now the Nats are the team you're looking at because they're the team that you most seriously believe could get their act together and go on a run and put some pressure on the Mets. But here's what I see. I'm not going to get too deep into the numbers here because, you know, numbers to me, the first, 4, 5, 6 weeks of the season, one way or the other, it really doesn't make a difference because they're going to fluctuate. They're going to go up and down. I mean, Yoenis Cespedes is not going to hit 190 for the year. I mean, I'd be very surprised. And that's where he's about at right now after his performance today. So, and I don't think Yoenis Cespedes is going to be a below league average hitter for the year. And I don't know if Todd Frazier is going to have a 170 OPS plus for the whole year. And and hit 300. So on that flip side. But what I see from the Mets right now is an energy level. An energy level that every game, every series, they're going out there taking it very seriously. They're not mailing anything in. You could have easily mailed in the Washington game last week on Sunday and said, we could have, took two out of three, be satisfied. You easily could have mailed in the final Miami game, getting no hit. Good road trip, 5-1. We'll take it. And then after last night into today, cold, Syndergaard didn't go as deep as you want, some bad play. This was the kind of game last year that I certainly think the Mets would have lost. But in each case, the Mets won. They have seven come-from-behind wins. They had something crazy like at one point in 23 innings where the other team scored. They had like 12 times they came back and tied the game. You saw that with Brandon Nimmo today with the home run. This is a team that's bringing it every night and continues to come and bring their best effort. And if you're the opposition, you got to really put your best foot forward. You got to really be on your toes to beat this team right now. And that's a great foundation. And that starts from the top. That starts from management. That starts with the manager. That starts with the pitching coach. Certainly that starts with the veteran leadership of the clubhouse. I kept telling you guys the last couple of years, this wasn't as bad of a team as it was performing on the field. Yes, again, you saw today, defensively, there's limitations. Yes, they're a little feast or famine with the offense. They can be prone to brownouts. The starting pitching, the help will always be a question. The bullpen I always thought was mismanaged. We're not going to get into that. But there's a good energy level that all of a sudden now you're seeing the best out of these guys day in and day out. There's an acceptance of roles. Brandon Nimmo gets sent down a week ago, and Mickey Callaway's talking about how it was the best conversation he's had on a send-down from his memory. Brandon Nimmo had no reason to be sent down other than the fact that in spring training, Mickey Callaway said, if you have options, if you're a guy like Jacob Rehm who had a big save a week ago but now is in Vegas, you might get sent down because you have options. If you're Brandon Nimmo, you might get sent down if they need an extra arm. And that's going to go for some other guys with options on this team. Reyes, a veteran coming back here, accepting a role as a backup. The bullpen, I'm sure A.J. Ramos wants to close. I don't think he wants to come in and get a hitter here, a hitter there. But on this team, they're all accepting of their role. They're embracing it. And that's a big thing. That to me says a lot. A guy like Yoenis Cespedes with the flu, with a cold or whatever he had, not wanting to take a day off. He wants to show everybody, hey, I'm not a dog. I'm not here to just chill and collect my check. You have to – that says a lot. That shows a lot to the rest of the team. By no means am I saying that Cespedes is this leader now. I think those are – that's kind of where Todd Frazier comes into play. But, the leader by example, the energy level, the what that tells the rest of the team. If Cespedes could grind it out when he easily could have taken a day off, then you know what? Who the hell is anybody else to do that? Not taking at-bats off, not taking games off. That's how you win divisions. That's how you make the playoffs. That's how you set a good foundation, a good culture, and that's how you put yourself in the best position to win. And it hasn't been the case here in a really, really, really long time. And I'm not sure it was the case here in 2015 all that much either until the end of the season, more so towards the playoffs. I wasn't sure if you even had that component. That was kind of lightning in the bottle. And then once you get into the playoffs and it's a tournament, how the hell can't you do all those things? How can you not suck it up and come to play? How can you not sacrifice? How can you not accept your role? But you know what? To get to the tournament, to get to those 5- and 7-game series, you have to do a lot of work. And this idea that you just bunch it into 6 weeks or you hang out and things will come together because you're this kind of team, that's not the way it works. You have to start from day one. And what you're seeing the Mets doing is what the Nats have done to the Mets number of times over the last 4, 5, 6 years. Come out from the gate burning. And they set the tone. They take control of the division. You're going to have your peaks and valleys. Every team does. But eventually, you set a solid foundation where when it's all said and done, you look up, you got yourself a 90, 92, 95 win team. And those are the teams that go into the playoffs and set themselves up for success. And that's what this team is doing. You can't say enough. You can't say enough about any of the performances. And look, they're not all hitting great. Cespedes has got an OPS under 700. Rosario, for as exciting as he can be, still swings at too many bad pitches. He's not hitting a heck of a lot. Defense was a little questionable today. Probably it's something to do a little bit with the weather. He needs to adjust to that. You know, Flores up until today is hitting well under 200. He had the big home run. Adrian Gonzalez is not really hitting for much power other than the Grand Slam. But when you start to look up and down, even, you know, the pitchers, DeGrom and Syndergaard, Syndergaard was better today, but they haven't hit their stride, either of them yet. They haven't been themselves. I mean, think about it. And yeah, I saw the Fangraphs post, which said, well, you know, the Mets, of course, they're 12-2. You know, more than half their starts have been by Syndergaard. You know, they got 14 games, and six of them are at this point anyway have been started, almost half by Syndergaard and DeGrom. At the end of the year, it's not going to be that way when you factor in their 30, 32 starts each against 162-game schedule. But so what? They haven't been great. I haven't really felt either one of them have given you vintage Syndergaard or DeGrom. I think all of you would agree on that. You know, Harvey hasn't been great. We'll get to him. I have some thoughts on him. You know, Matt's up and down. Wheeler had one good outing. Let's see him do it against a professional team like the Nats this week. I mean, the bullpen really has carried them. I mean, how can you be much better than all the zero ERAs? Ramos, no runs. Familia, no runs. Blevins, no runs. And some of those, if you start to look at their fielding independent pitching, which just factors what they can control, the walks, the home runs, the strikeouts, they're not as good as their ERAs indicate, but they're getting the job done. And they're coming in, they're accepting their role, and they're getting the job done, and they're having fun, and they're excited, and they're bringing this kind of energy. I said week one. I just threw it in. We did a quick intro week one when I talked about opening weekend. The energy was very evident. And that's not the only thing that's going to take them to the promised land. They have to execute. They have to be better. The starting pitching has to be better. The bullpen has to, you know, the walks are a little high if you start looking at the bullpen. They got to fix that. The offense right now, 7 come from behind wins. I think it's been more timely than solid. So you want to be able to go out there and get yourself a couple of easy wins so that you don't have to overuse this bullpen. So there's things that could be worked on. And as far as storm clouds, yeah, there's storm clouds. The catchers, look, you lost 2 catchers in within a 48-hour span. Darno out for the year with Tommy John surgery. Plawecki, he'll be back in 3 or 4 weeks. So you're going to have to go with Nitto. You're going to have to go with Lobatone. Really, at this point, if the catchers give you any offense where they could be replacement level and frame and defend and maybe throw out a runner or two, because that's a really big problem with this staff. They're very easy to run on, and you don't want to have singles turn into doubles and triples that easily. That's going to be hard to pitch to after a certain amount of time. I'm fine with going with Lobatone and Nitto. They don't have to go out and panic and go get themselves a Real Muto. Of course, you go out and monitor the catching market. You know, you're going to do that. And maybe Sandy Olson at some point will say, I need to bring in a veteran receiver at some point, one that is a little bit better than what he has. But he doesn't have to do that in April. And I don't even know if that's going to be Real Muto. I wouldn't, in a farm system which is just starting to see some of the prospects that were promising, but everybody was down on, like Anthony Kay. You know, you see that, and you don't know what you're going to get out of a Peter Alonso. You know, there's a couple of interesting bullpen arms up and down the organization. It's not time to start cleaning out, or even the guys in the low levels that are the top 1 or 2 prospects, or Jimenez or guys like that. Not time to start saying, let's just throw them at the Marlins to get Real Muto here. You don't have to do that. You got to handle storm cloud. So that's one storm cloud. The other storm cloud, I would say, look, the starting pitchers have to start giving you better length. And I heard Mickey Callaway in the postgame talk about why he took Syndergaard out after 5 1/3 and 100 pitches. Day like today, like he said, it's about staying healthy. Look, I saw Doc Gooden many years ago throw 150 pitches on a day like today in 1990, less than 6 months from having a serious shoulder injury. You know, and that was in the era of Davey Johnson and the 80s Mets, and I don't think anybody would have accused them of being incompetent. But you know, you look back and maybe some of those taxing ways that they treated a David Cone and a Doc Gooden took years off their career. And you could go back and look at the numbers and the pitch counts. And if you remember and old enough to remember some of the conditions, they pushed their starting pitchers. So I'm not suggesting that Syndergaard should have been taken, you know, should have been going and pushed to 120 pitches in a day like today. That's not what I'm suggesting. But at some point, you know, in a game like in Miami in more of a controlled environment, yeah, I expect you to go 7 innings and 120 pitches. I think that's if you want to be considered an elite top of the rotation ace, you have to do that. 5 5 1/3, 5 2/3, 6. That's really not an ace. That's a really solid number three. And that's what they're pitching like. And that's DeGrom too. They're pitching like, yeah, they're really good solid number threes who could be number ones or number twos. pitching that way, and I think they will, especially DeGrom, and I'm sure Syndergaard will come along. So you got to give them the length. You got to get six more outs. You've got to take away the need to go to Gazelman and Lugo every night. You got to be able to, give Ramos a day off. You know, Blevins, look, a lefty like that, I also think he's going to have to expect to pitch almost every day because he's only asked to get one batter out. But it's also about how often do you get him hot. You know, these are things that were not the strengths of the Collinsworth and regime, especially with situational lefties. So it's not just about how they get into the game. It's how often they get hot, you know, and things like that. So it starts with the starting pitchers. It starts the length they give you. But look, last night was a night where Sewald came in and he ate three innings and he looked really sharp and maybe gave you something to think about in a game where you're not behind, where Sewald could come in and maybe get some of those big outs that Gazelman and Lugo get, or maybe Ramos get if you want to give them a day off. So to me, those are the two storm clouds, the catching situation, the length of the starting pitchers. Maybe if you want to add in the fact that the hitters have been very timely, which is a big thing, but maybe not all that good. You know, you haven't seen much out of Cespedes yet. Conforto hasn't really got going. Jay Bruce has been okay. Really, Todd Frazier and Cabrera have been the only two that have been lights out in this offense. You know, Gonzalez had a couple of moments. Rosario, offensively, you know. But look, again, the fact that they're 12-2, and I can point to some very detailed situations where, you know, not everything is clicking on all cylinders with the pitching and the offense, that's a really good sign. And a lot of it has to come where every day you come in knowing your role and you try to come and bring it every day, you'd be surprised what a team can accomplish. I know that that's anecdotal. I know that that sounds cliche, but so far it's really been the case. Everybody's playing within themselves and contributing at a level that's acceptable for who they are and what their role is on the roster. And if you don't like Brandon Nimmo by now, and I've been down on Nimmo at times, too passive, you know, not necessarily the impact bat you would expect from a number one draft pick. Who knows? You know, this is a guy that eventually, you know, if he continues to show the plate discipline, the ability to want to be in a big spot, the energy, the attitude. I mean, how many players would be okay if their hot start getting sent down for no other reason than, it's numbers. By the way, that affects service time and money and free agency. So it's not just about him getting playing time. It affects him in the wallet at some point. So, you know, to me, that says a lot about this team and the kind of guys and Brandon Nimmo. And you know what? That's a guy to keep an eye out for because at some point he may become a really solid starting piece in this lineup. It's too bad he can't play first base because I think he'd be a nice first base position, you know, guy that could be in the lineup. Maybe that's something to think about down the road, right? Not right now. Anyway, let's take a break. When we return, Dino Costa of 970 AM The Answer at Dino Radio NYC will join me. We'll get his thoughts on the Mets. We'll talk about what he's doing there over at 970 AM and talking New York sports. You remember Dino from Mad Dog Radio, and you know, he had spent a lot of time on that channel, and he's done a couple other projects throughout his career here in New York. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check out the show all the time at MetsMorizedOnline.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media, and you get the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and whatever podcasting service you desire. We'll be back with Dino Costa of 970 AM Radio right after this.
1-2 coming. And Flores hits it out to left center field. Back in the gap toward the wall. It's out of here! Wilmer Flores ends it with a walk-off home run. The Mets' first walk-off win of the year, and it's Wilmer who provides the game-ender.
We're back, and as I said, joining us from AM 970, The Answer, Tuesday to Friday from 12 to 3 a.m. You can check him out on Twitter at Dino Radio NYC. You guys know him from his time over at Mad Dog Radio, as well as a number of other projects he's been involved in. It's Dino Costa. He's now talking New York sports, and he's joining us here. Let's talk a little Mets baseball. Dino, pleasure to have you on. Welcome, back to the Big Apple. How you doing?
Yeah, Mike, it's good to be back, and thanks so much. And I could listen to that Jane Jarvis melody that you play there at the start of your show a couple more times. That's good stuff.
Yeah, listen, you certainly have done a lot in radio, and you've been outside of New York, but you've always maintained that the Mets have been one of your teams. You're also a Devils fan. I know you're probably pretty psyched about the playoffs and the Devils, but let's talk some Mets baseball and historic start, 12-2 start, despite all the cold and raw weather this weekend. Give me your succinct analysis of the Mets. I know you were at last night's game and covered the game as well.
Yeah, and I brought a lot of luck to Citi Field with me that broke their 9-game losing streak. So I'll try to stay away from Citi Field from now on. But to be serious, I mean, you mentioned it, Mike, a historic start. And I think a much-needed start for the Mets. You know, I've been saying on my radio program the last couple of weeks, before the season actually started, that I felt it was imperative that the Mets get off to a good start to instill a winning culture within the team, and also to, you know, wash out the season they had a year ago. You know, new staff, Mickey Callaway, some new players, and Todd Frazier and some other guys. The pitching staff, of course, which still continues to be a big question mark with this team. I just thought it was very important that they get off to a good start. Now, I didn't think it'd be 12-2 or 11-1, but that they got out of the box in a positive fashion and they started to believe that they could compete and contend this year. And so far, so good. You got to love the contributions they're getting from the entire 25-man roster for the most part. And today was another perfect example of that. Nimmo, who plays sparingly, hits the home run that ties the game after they fall behind. And then Wilmer Flores in the bottom of the ninth with two out puts the ball over the wall, and the Mets win again after losing last night. So if you're a Mets fan, you got to be very excited. And I think that what this this start does for them is it gives them some cushion, you know, moving down through the next several weeks and months ahead. I think I said on my show the other night, Mike, that based off of the 11-1 start, if they went 500 the rest of the way, they'd win, I think, 87 games if they merely played 500 ball. So if they can do a little bit better than that, then they're on a pace for 90-plus wins. And, of course, that puts them in a great position to get back to the postseason. It's been a lot of fun. It's been nice to watch this team winning so many games so early in the season.
Dino Costa joining us. Dino is on AM 970 Radio. You can check him out 12 to 3 a.m. Check him out on Twitter at Dino Radio NYC. And you mentioned Brandon Nimmo, a Wyoming boy. You've spent some time out there in Wyoming, and he really symbolizes what I feel is the most important part of this group. Now, look, you have to have talent, and you mentioned the starting pitching, and I know that the health is still something that's fluid, and we'll get to that. Performance as well, but the energy level that this team has nightly, the fact that they're accepting of their roles, you know, Nimmo specifically gets sent down earlier in the week because for no other reason than he has options and they need a pitcher to come out of the bullpen, and he's like, look, you know, I'll do what I can control, and I you know, I'll worry about what I can control, and he understood that, and I'm sure he wasn't happy, but here he goes, comes back, hits a home run. And a lot of these guys, whether it's Ramos, you know, not becoming the closer and pitching to a couple of batters, you know, the bullpen guys like Lugo, who could have been a starter, you know, going into the bullpen, excelling. Up and down, I think these guys understand what their role is. And I think that's so important. On top of that, the energy level and the sense of urgency, like you said, to start the season. To me, forget the numbers for a second. That, to me, is a big theme of this 12-2 start.
Yeah, Mike, you make some great points, all of them. And you're right. I agree with everything you say. You know, just alluding back to what I said a second ago about getting contributions from everyone on the roster, and you talked about the, you know, players accepting their roles and becoming productive pieces of this team off the bench, and guys to play sparingly, whether it's, you know, the two guys today that really excelled with Flores, and of course Nimmo, as you mentioned before. Gesellman in the bullpen, Lugo, as you mentioned. There's a great chemistry that seems to be building with this club. I feel like you get the sense this is a very tight-knit bunch. I think Callaway and his coaching staff really need to be commended for merging all the components and bringing these guys together with a team-first mentality. And as far as Nimmo is concerned, yeah, he's living in Wyoming the last 6 years. I got to know Brandon Nimmo pretty well, and of course, in Wyoming, they don't have high school baseball. They've got the American Legion ball, and he was part of the most successful American Legion team in the state of Wyoming post-6. And I've always liked Brandon. I think he, you know, one of the things you see, Mike, I think you'd agree, is he goes up there and he never wastes an at bat, never gives one away. He's always working the count. He's a guy that puts the ball in play most times, doesn't strike out, draws his share of walks. The thing I love about Nimmo is he's a grinder, Mike, and the Mets have not had players like that the last couple of years. I've said on my show the Mets could use more guys like Brandon Nimmo, and you just get the feeling that wherever you plug him in and whenever Mickey Callaway calls upon him that, you know, he's going to give 1,000% maximum effort and just wants to contribute to the team in any way he can, and so far so good. And he's a player to watch going forward because I think he's going to be instrumental in the Mets' success this season.
And I think you mentioned grinders. I think Todd Frazier would fall into that. And look, he's off to a great start. I mean, offensively, he's got great discipline. But it's no coincidence that he seems to be the guy when the pitcher's getting into a little bit of trouble going over to the mound. You know, he seems to have taken this whole salt and pepper thing pretty seriously. And it's amazing how a guy that was pretty much on the scrap heap, nobody wanted him, a very reasonable 2-year deal, could come in and, you know, look, maybe I'm overstating it. It's only 13 games or 14 games he's played, but I think that he's brought this leadership component, this grit that you talk about that they've been missing, and maybe in a way replacing what they might have gotten from David Wright if he was healthy.
Yeah, he's, you know, all the things you said, you continue to hit on some great points, Mike. He's a sage. You know, he's quickly become the mayor of the Mets clubhouse, I think, in a lot of different ways. And you mentioned he comes in from third base and, you know, gives a pep talk to the pitcher or whatever. I think we haven't seen that in years. I know Keith Hernandez obviously used to do that a lot when he was with the Mets. But I advocated very strongly going back months ago before Frazier signed with the Mets for the Mets to get him because I thought he could be a perfect complement to this team and provide, you know, in the age of analytics where everything is measured and looked at. One of the things about Frazier is that he brings intangibles to the club that maybe aren't able to be measured. You know, the unmeasurable qualities, the things that, you know, don't really show up in a box score. I think Todd Frazier brings a lot of that. I think he brings a winning mentality. I think he is a big part of the culture change that we've seen in the first couple weeks of the season. And I think it started right from the moment they signed him with his opening press conference and the things he said that he, you know, then carried into spring training and right into the start of the season. He's loosened up that clubhouse. I think, you know, in a lot of ways, he's not, the Mets don't have a captain right now, per se, with Wright not being on the playing roster. But if there's a guy that's a captain of this team in an unofficial capacity, I think you could look at Todd Frazier as being that guy. So, he seems to love playing here, enjoyed his time with the Yankees last year. And, you know, we're fortunate as Mets fans that, you know, the Yankees were only willing to go a year with him as most other clubs were probably only willing to go a year with him. And I thought it was a very good signing by Sandy Alderson and so far so good with Todd Frazier. So let's hope we see more of what he's brought to the table over the next several weeks and months ahead.
You can check Dino out at thedinoshow.com, at Dino Radio NYC, 12 to 3 a.m. on AM 970, all New York sports, not just baseball, talking all New York sports. And during a time when there's a lot of transition in New York sports radio, somebody that I think could bring some sanity to the airwaves in this town. Good starts don't come without storm clouds, Dino. And Travis d'Arnaud is out for the year. Kevin Pulocki will be down for a few weeks. Also, the starting pitchers you mentioned a little earlier, they're not really giving you the length. So a couple of things here. First, I'm not in the camp, and I'm curious your thoughts of going out, running out, and panicking, going out and trying to overpay for a Real Muto or you know, and I'm not saying give up a top prospect, but give up anything of value just to bring a catcher of some experience in here. I'd say let's see what Lobatone and Nitto have. I don't think they're going to kill you as long as they're good defensively. As far as the starting pitchers, DeGrom and Syndergaard, even in this start, have not really been vintage DeGrom and Syndergaard. Syndergaard was really good today, but he didn't give them length. And then Matt Harvey, who you watched last night, you know, he still is shown to be, I mean, he couldn't be any worse than he was last year, but he's still very hittable against good offensive teams. You saw him get hit a little bit last night and then against Washington a week earlier. The starting pitchers have to give length. It has to start with DeGrom and Syndergaard. I don't see why you can't push them to about 120 pitches. I know today was a raw day. I understand maybe why they didn't do that with Syndergaard, but Part of that is efficiency. Part of that is how they go about their craft. So to me, those would be the two storm clouds, the catching situation and then the starting pitching, which could lead to maybe bullpen overutilization, a bullpen that should be strong if it's rested and used properly.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more on your perception of the catching situation, Mike. I am also in your camp. I don't think that the Mets should panic here. You know, the cost of bringing in a real Muto or anyone else, I think might be prohibitive for this team right now. I'm quite content with Nito and Lobaton, at least for the time being, and then Plawecki comes back hopefully in about a month. These guys can hold the fort until then. They're not going to give you a lot with the bat, but you know what you want is for these guys to go out there and call a good game. And anything you know extra they give you with the bat is going to be is just going to be gravy. So I don't think that Alderson should panic in this situation and feel as though he's got an urgent need at catcher. I think you play Nito and you play Lobaton together over the next couple of weeks, and then whichever of those two catchers is playing the best at that point, when Plawecki comes back, he slides back into the starting role, obviously, and then you keep either Lobaton or Nito as the backup. I like Nito. I think he's a respectable catcher, and I think he's going to get his fair share of hits. He's not certainly going to be a guy that's going to light the world on fire from the batter's box, but I think he could be the perfect complement to your starting catcher. As far as the pitching staff is concerned, you'd like to see a little bit more length with these guys. I think the weather in the first couple of weeks, sans that series, of course, in Miami, has precluded them from maybe going as deep into games as we'd like to see. And it's still relatively early in the season, but I did note what you said about the bullpen and overtaxing it. I don't think they've done that at this point right now. I thought Callaway made a very good point in the postgame today, Mike, when he said, you know, in a perfect world, and I may be paraphrasing a bit here, but he said in the perfect world, you'd love for your starters to go longer and not use the bullpen as much as the Mets have had to use it. And I think the Mets, just like other teams, have had to use their bullpen, you know, pretty significantly over the first couple of weeks of the season, especially given the weather across the country. But Callaway said, listen, at the end of the day, the objective is to win the game. And if that means that we've got to go to the bullpen in certain situations where maybe we would like to see the starter out there for a longer duration of time, well, then we've got to do that. But I think that Syndergaard and Harvey at the top, you're right. They have, you said they've not been vintage. I couldn't agree with you more. Harvey last night was not very good. And Callaway said in the postgame, this is something he has said about Harvey couple different times over the first couple of weeks of the season, not only Harvey, but a couple of the other pitchers as well, and that they're not pitching with conviction. And meaning, of course, that it could mean a couple different things. Number one, that Harvey is not trusting his stuff. Or number two, he's thinking about mechanics too much on the mound. Syndergaard talked about that after the game today, where he said, you know, part of his success today was he acknowledged that he was thinking too much about his overall mechanics while he was on the mound in a couple of his starts this season. And that was not allowing him to let his natural talent flourish. And I think today Noah was more Noah-like, and you'd like to see more of what he, you know, gave you today. But listen, the top two I think are going to be okay, health provided. Harvey, I still hold out hope that he's going to be able to be a better pitcher than what he showed last night. There's been glimpses this year of him, you know, kind of finding his stuff on a more consistent basis. I don't think we're ever going to see the Harvey of 3 and 4 years ago. I think those days are long gone. And as far as the rest of the staff is concerned, I remain very high on Mats. I think that by midseason, working with Dave Island and Mickey Callaway, I think Mats is going to be a consistent pitcher. I love his stuff. I think that's another guy that needs to think less about mechanics and just allowing his natural talent to flow. And then when Vargas gets back, you know, we'll see what happens. I think that this staff certainly is emphasizing winning and not developing. And I think all these guys, you know, after you get through the first two guys at the top of the rotation, Mike, I think all these guys will be on short leashes that, you know, a couple of bad performances in a row and, you know, the Mets could change some things up and, you know, maybe give Lugo a start or maybe give Gesellman a start or, you know, I know they called up Corey Oswalt last week. He's another guy to keep your eyes on. But I think that as far as the staff overall is concerned, I think we need to get another 3-4 weeks, maybe a month down the road, and I think we'll have a much better read on the staff from top to bottom.
Yeah, and the kind of competition, I think, is always good. It keeps everybody honest. There's no guarantee that Matt Harvey will stay in the rotation. Doesn't matter what your resume is or what the back of the baseball card says. It's about what you're doing now and about winning. And I think for a long time, everybody was on scholarships here. Hey, you always have been a very compelling talk show host. Anywhere you've been, you've blended sports and politics and current events into your show, and now you're doing New York sports and talk. And I mean, you've always been good at a good rant or, you know, something that really got the juices flowing, the callers in, the debate in. Give me a good topic that's really, you know, got you going over the last week. Has there been something baseball related, something New York sports related? Give the list the listeners here a flair of what's going on with Dino Costa, and when they tune in to AM 970, you know, what's really got your blood boiling? What's got you going out there?
Well, I don't know if it, you know, I would describe it as blood boiling, but, you know, certainly I can be very emotional and passionate on the air, especially given my ability to procure opinion as regularly as I do. But I think it's the whole mixture, Michael, of the New York sports scene. You know, one of the things that I touched upon last week was the if you go back to last Sunday night, was the A-Rod situation where he said that, you know, thinking back now with plenty of time and distance after he signed with the Texas Rangers coming off of that 2000 season, that perhaps he would have taken more control of his career and not allowed his agent to basically dictate all the terms 100%. And it's ironic that A-Rod mentioned this because just the week leading up to that Sunday night ESPN telecast, I had talked about what I feel is a gargantuan opportunity that the Mets missed back in 2000 by not coming to an agreement with A-Rod, which would have changed the trajectory of the Mets franchise in a significant way, as well as some other teams. And the Mets would have had a historical player with them that, you know, his number would have been retired, the number of home runs and RBIs and the number of tickets sold and the whole impact of A-Rod on the Mets. It would have been interesting to see, you know, how that would have materialized. And I always felt that the Mets missed an opportunity there. And then Jim Duquette responded after that, the former Mets general manager, who I've got a wealth of respect for. I've known Jim for a very long time. But Jim was on a radio show the next day and said, hey, listen, you know, A-Rod wanted this and A-Rod wanted that. And my whole point was, listen, you were dealing with not only a historical player, but at the age of 26, coming off of that 2000 season, and a player who was, you know, giving off significant vibes that he wanted to join the Mets. You know, A-Rod grew up a Mets fan, you know, was a passionate Mets fan, wanted to play for the Mets. And I felt that once the negotiations commenced, that the Mets were too knee-jerkish in their reaction of just closing the door in a very, very fast way. And as I go back and I think about it, it's unfortunate that the Mets didn't say to themselves, hey, listen, okay, fine, he wants a merchandising tent, or he wants this, or he wants that. Let's meet with him. You know, let's call Boris and get a meeting with A-Rod so we can get a better sense. Maybe we can negotiate some of these things. Certainly, maybe the Mets are not going to give him everything that he wanted at that time, but, you know, we're going to give A-Rod A, B, and C, but not, you know, D, F, and G. It's, you know, and we'll pay him, you know, $200 million, and you're going to bring the best player in the game to the Mets starting with the 2001 season. And I said, I mean, you know, come on, you're going to tell me that you're going to allow the request for a merchandising tent to keep you from the best player in the game at that time? And then, you know, Duquette also said, well, he wasn't sure if Piazza would have gotten along with A-Rod. And I said, well, what the hell does that matter? Because, I mean, A-Rod and Jeter never got along, and the Yankees didn't have any hesitation in bringing A-Rod along. And, you know, and then Duquette also said that he would have had to take anywhere from $50 to $75 million less than what the Yankees or what the Rangers had eventually paid him. And I said, listen, if you offered him $200 million and you gave him 24, 48 hours to either accept or reject the deal, then you could have moved on. But you could have said to A-Rod, based upon the parameters of the New York market, what we're not offering you in terms of salary, I mean, off-the-field endorsements and all the product marketing opportunities that A-Rod would have had in New York, he certainly would have been able to make up the money that the Mets would not have matched in terms of payroll that Texas eventually ended up paying him. So, I mean, that's one thing. And, you know, I've talked about the NFL draft and the Jets and the Giants. And, you know, I feel that Josh Allen is the best quarterback in this draft. I'd love to see the Jets get him. I don't think he's going to be on the board when they pick at three because I think the Browns are going to take him number one. I don't think the Giants are taking a quarterback at two. I think they're either going to go with Saquon Barkley or they're going to go for the offensive lineman, Quentin Nelson, out of Notre Dame. You know, the Rangers and firing Alain Vigneault and the Islanders situation, which continues to befuddle, you know, many Islanders fans in terms of Ledecky, the owner, keeping the current arrangement with the general manager, Garth Snow, and their head coach. And the Devils, of course, is the last team standing in the metro area as far as playoff hockey is concerned. I've mixed all of that in, and so many other things that, you know, I talk about on a regular and consistent basis on the show. I'm having a terrific time. It's great to be back in my hometown. It's great to be around people that can relate, I think, better to me, and an audience, I think, that appreciates the kind of sports radio that I provide. And, you know, we'll be going into our fifth broadcast month as the calendar flips from April to May shortly ahead. And I'm just having a terrific time being back, Mike. I wish I had made this decision to come back here many years ago. So.
Yeah, well, it's nice to hear you back on and the airwaves and talking and being able to talk New York sports, because obviously when you're on a national serious broadcast, you have the limitations of how much New York you can do. Now, Dino, thedinoshow.com, at Dino Radio NYC, AM 970 on the dial, Tuesday to Friday from 12 to 3 a.m. Anything else the listeners need to know, Dino, to catch you? Are you on iTunes? Can they get the replay? I'm sure there's a number of people who are interested in hearing what you have to say on a weekly, daily basis.
Yeah, we're on four nights a week, Mike, Tuesday through Friday. That's Monday night late going into Tuesday morning, and then Thursday night late going into Friday morning. It's on AM 970, as you mentioned, The Answer. And, of course, people can listen to the show live. They can listen to the show live on my website, as you mentioned, thedinoshow.com, or the station website, am970theanswer.com. And, yes, the show is on iTunes. And the archives of each show are posted on my website as well as on the am970theanswer.com website. And so people can listen to the show, you know, the next day if they can't listen to the show live because of work commitments and needing to get to sleep and things like that. So,
Dino, it's been a long time. Pleasure having you on here. You're on the money here with the Mets, and let's do this again. And I will be listening over at 970 AM. All righty, my friend?
Michael, anytime. It's really good to hear your voice again and catch up with you. And, you know, I've always loved appearing whenever you've asked me to, and I feel privileged to be a part of this. And anytime you need me, I'm always willing to come on, and I hope I get an opportunity to get together. I think the last time we got together was when I had that Dino dinner when I was still at Sirius
yep.
XM. So it's been quite some time. Yeah, I hope
I think he's still going around, for lack of a better word, terrorizing sports talk throughout the.
I think Leslie today is in Minnesota. Tomorrow he's going to be in Detroit. I don't know where he is these days.
Like, where's Waldo? Right, yeah, where's Waldo?
Yeah.
All right, Dino, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Mike. Have a great night.
That's Dino Costa. You can check him out, like I said, at Dino Radio NYC, 970 AM. The Answer. Really interesting stuff. It's funny, you know, he kind of had gone over out west, Wyoming, I think St. Louis, Portland. I was always a Dino fan when he was at Sirius. He did have that big Dino dinner when I think it was a movie he was shooting. Had a chance to meet Justin Termini, who does a ton of great work over at NBA Radio over on Sirius. And that was around the time I was doing my ESPN Long Island radio junket, I guess. And you know, this is, I love radio. I love doing this podcast. And I've met so many cool, interesting people. And Dino, whether you agree, disagree, like his opinion, dislike his opinion, he's very compelling. And I've had a ton of respect for how he's gone about the process. And look, anybody who's been in radio and sacrificed, you know, anybody who's been in radio has sacrificed money for their passion. You got to respect that as he continues to move along the radio continuum here. And he's back in New York, and I wish him well, and I'll be tuning in to AM 970, and I'm sure we'll have him on again, as it's always good to have different compelling voices on this program. All right, let's take a quick break. When we return, final thoughts. Want to give you a little bit of a taste of what I think about everybody panicking about the weather. Bad weather in Chicago, bad weather in Detroit, bunch of postponements, snow, rain, raw weather here in New York. You know, everybody's freaking out. I think there's also I think Forbes, our buddy Maury Brown over at Forbes, just came out with something that says the attendance has certainly been hit. No surprise there. So let's wrap up. Final thoughts, give you my opinion on the weather and what MLB and the network should look at here, because they really don't have anybody to blame but themselves in a lot of this. So let's take a quick break. When we return, we'll wrap up. Final thoughts here on the Talking Mets podcast. We'll be right back.
Hey, Mets fans. I'm going to let you in on a little secret. If you're looking for the best unbiased and independent coverage of the New York Mets, then look no further than MetsMerizedOnline.com. Mesmerized Online is the go-to place for comprehensive Mets coverage, including exclusive interviews, daily original articles, great weekly features, in-depth analysis, minor league reports, game-by-game breakdowns, and so much more. Find out why thousands of fans turn to Mesmerized Online every day to get the latest news and opinions about the Mets. Coming from an impressive staff of the most passionate fans and skilled writers ever assembled, all in one place. Check it out for yourselves, Mets fans. Go to MetsMerizedOnline.com right now. That's Mets, M-E-R-I-Z-E-D, online.com, and get Metsmerized today.
We're back. Final thoughts. I want to thank Dino Costa for joining us. Some interesting stuff he had to say. Final thought here, and the weather. What was it today? About three or four games postponed out in Detroit. The weather in the Midwest has been awful. Northern Midwest, Central Time Zone, basically. The Mets really the last two nights have not been playing in baseball weather. I'm not blaming that on whatever bad play you saw defensively or offensively, because both teams are playing in that. But I don't think you got the best baseball of the last 48 hours. And look, it's hard for Major League Baseball to do a lot because you can't predict the weather. I mean, who would have thought we'd had four nor'easters in a row in March here in New York? You can't predict that. And that there'd be snow during the first week of the regular season. Usually once you hit March 1st, March 5th, yeah, there's been the occasional snowstorm second, third week of March. It's not unprecedented, despite what all the, you know, global warming crew wants you to know. It's not. I mean, maybe it's been unprecedented in the last 20 years or some people's lifetime, but if you go back in history, it's not unprecedented in any lifetime. But regardless of that, you have to say that weather plays a big part in a game that no longer just goes 2 hours and 5 minutes. I mean, it used to be a baseball game would be quick. Now you've got commercials, you've got longer games, despite the fact that they've got the mound visits under control, and that seems to have had a little bit of an impact in terms of the crispness and the flow of the game. You're still going to get – today's game was 3 hours and 30 minutes. You're going to have a three-hour game. You're really not going to go much south of that number than 3 hours. With that said, night games, ESPN night games on East Coast time zones like they had in Washington, D.C. last Sunday, starting games on the weekend in the evenings like they did the Mets. And I know the Mets have done some surveys or said that most people would prefer night games on Saturday than day games, because when you have a day game, it basically kills your whole day. I get that. Maybe you wait till late May, Memorial Day, Mother's Day, maybe May 8th, before you start hammering out the night games on a weekend. Because if you played yesterday's game during the day, you would have had a nice 72, 75 degree experience. I think the fans would have, you know, could have had a great ballpark experience. The hitters would have had a good experience. I think you would have had a really crisp baseball game yesterday. Instead, the temperature dropped 20 degrees in a matter of a couple of hours after about 5 o'clock. And you had a chilly, not as bad as today, but a chilly day. So I think baseball, it's hard to schedule everybody on the West Coast and in domes. I don't think that'd be that easy to schedule everybody there. But you're going to start the season with days off and trying to get the playoffs done before, you know, Thanksgiving, which is what happens now. And if you want to start the last week of March, you're going to have to start thinking about those first 7 to 10 days, because – yeah, April 15th, this kind of raw weather is not unprecedented in the history of baseball. April 15th, seasons already have started. I mean, back in the day, they thought, what, April 9th, 10th, you know, maybe like the 5th or 6th or 7th. I mean, they wouldn't start April 1st until the end of March, other than maybe an outlier here or there. For the most part, baseball's always been played by April 15th in the United States, even back in the day, in his raw and cold days. But because you've already been playing for about 3 weeks, you've had 2 weeks of bad weather that you normally wouldn't have had. This stands out more on April 15th. So they really got to start thinking about it. The Mets really should think about in April and May the weekend night games. And ESPN, look, you could have Mets Nats on national TV later in the year. I know that's a marquee game. You want to get marquee games. You want the best product out there. Whatever. I just think that baseball should say, hey, part of our deal here is until about May 15th, try to have those 8 o'clock games, West Coast dome games, if you can, as best as they can. I mean, Washington, D.C., first, second week of April, you're asking for it. I mean, really, come on. So that's just my final thought about the weather and some of the things you've seen around baseball over the last couple of weeks, because I think the weather has just been – it's been a brutal, brutal spring. And I think what's going to happen is what you saw yesterday. You're just going to all of a sudden see 75-degree days, and I think that spring will just pop up. One day you're going to wake up, 75 degrees outside, all your flowers and trees have bloomed overnight. That's what's going to happen. That's what it seems like it's going to be. And then you're really into the baseball season. So anyway, I want to thank Dino Costa for joining us today at Dino Radio NYC. Check him out Tuesday to Friday on AM 970. From 12 to 3 a.m. Of course, I want to thank the good folks over at MetsMorizedOnline.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Civil Media, and you can get the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire, as well as the iHeart Radio Network with the grueling truth. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your week. We will be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Take care.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said. Done.